Welcome to Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust, covering car culture and the automotive world with Shane Osborne, Brady Wright, and Steve, the producer, Johan. Let's see what's up this week.
Hey, it's Tuesday, May 12th. 2020, COVID-19, albeit still with us. Brady Wright, Shane Osborne, Steve, the producer, Johan, joining every listener on the entire planet with a mask. This is the 136th episode of Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust, and we are maintaining social distance. Hi, Steve.
Hi.
Hi. See, that's pretty social. You can find us on iTunes, iHeart Podcast, Spotify. Of course, we're on Podomatic.com and a bunch of others that Steve is researching even now. It's pretty cool to be into this, you know, in our third year and find out that we're on a whole bunch of venues that we're not even aware that the show is being shared on. That's kind of cool. Thank you for whoever's doing that.
Well, and we're going to be on YouTube, you and I, a little meeting prior to the show,
yes.
And I've got a few more technical things to think, but it will be under the Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust banner.
Yes.
So within about a week, we should have that all running.
Yeah. Steve is making me get a facelift because I have the perfect face for radio. And now...
Hey, it shows my little balding spot in the back of my head.
And my whole head is a balding spot. Don't even... Stop. What is that? Oh, your poor little balding spot. Oh, no. I'm bald from my head to my feet. Are you kidding me? Well, that's more than you needed to know.
I did see a picture of you when we first met.
Yeah.
And you had a full head of hair. I'm like,
well,
how did that happen?
I still have a full head of hair. It's just shaved off.
I have another friend who did the same thing.
Yeah.
He had the full head of hair. It was down to his shoulders. And the next thing you know, it's like, Alan, what'd you do? Oh, I just shaved it off.
I didn't go quite that far. I mean, my hair was always relatively short. But yeah, one day I just decided, you know what? I'm done with this. And it's been really, really great. It's coming up on 3 years now.
Yep.
And the advantage is that now that this whole coronavirus thing is going on and everybody's in quarantine, the barbers can't open, I don't care because I shave my head in the shower and I look just fine. Nobody knows. Hey, our first segment is, as usual, back to the blacktop, and that is where Steve Johan has ferreted out cool automotive stuff. Every week he comes up with something neat, and this will be no exception. What do you got?
Well, good news for big-ticket car buyers. Lamborghini has rolled out its brand-new Huracan EVO Spider.
Ooh.
The Italian sports car maker rolled out its newest model via a virtual rollout. Like everybody else,
sure.
The car will be available in a soft top powered by the naturally aspirated V10, putting out, how much do you think they're putting out?
1,200 horse.
No, 610. So
oh, come on.
Literally half of what you said
come
there.
Come on.
I know, 610 horsepower.
It's a Lamborghini.
With
Impress
a curb
me.
Weight. What?
Impress me. Come on.
I know. You well, it's got 3,326 pounds, so it's a lightweight vehicle.
That's pretty light.
Yeah. And the rear wheel driven. I like to drive this car.
Drive it.
The rear-wheel driven car will reach 62 miles per hour in just 3.5 seconds and will reach top speed of just over 200 miles per hour. So that's not bad at all.
It's respectable performance.
It is.
Now, these days, you know, with the Hellcats and the other
stuff. What was the one we were reading about? 1,200 horsepower?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, oh my goodness.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's, I mean, 0 to 60 3.2 is okay. That's not bad. And for 600 horsepower, that's probably pretty decent.
Right.
But I'm sure it handles real well on top of that, being a Lamborghini.
Well, and there's a lot of cars now just coming out of custom shops with a lot more than that, but they probably don't handle near as good as the Lamborghini.
Well, maybe.
And, more good news coming from a person I don't often speak highly of. Defying an order from the county officials, Elon Musk, on Monday, ordered the Tesla assembly plant in Fremont, California, to resume operations, stating he is ready to be arrested. He is moving forward after the Governor Newsom gave the green light while the county is still dragging its feet. So
he's got some legal on his side there. If the governor said it's okay and the county didn't, it's going to be fine. And he will do the right thing. He will maintain whatever social protocols involved. You know, you got to, so...
That's exactly right. And he, they cite in here that he, like myself, early skeptic on the potential damage that could be caused by the coronavirus, has remained outspoken in its opposition to lockdowns and plant closing. He has dubbed fascist, as have I. So in this regard, we can lock arms in solidarity and say, okay, we are together on this. But I just think that's really cool. But on the other hand, let's be honest, he waited for Newsom to give the green light, so then he will be okay because he's going to overcome.
He's got some legal background on things.
He does.
Yeah. It's going to be okay.
It will.
So many states and counties are doing kind of, I don't want to say their own thing, but they're opening up under conditions that make sense for them to do that, some in defiance of the laws, and it's the regulations. It's not a law.
No, it's not. That's what I'm saying.
But I think we're going to come out of this fine. It's just a matter of getting done with all of the, silliness.
Yes. You're the forever optimist. I'm like, no, it's going to take 10 years to recover after this thing.
Well, it won't.
We'll see. We can bet. I'll bet you $5 that it's going to take a lot longer than you think.
I think that the propaganda about it will go on much longer than the actual problem.
We'll see. We'll see. On Tuesday,
yes.
More bad news.
Oh, no.
The Honda Motor Company posted disappointing quarterly annual financial results.
Well, yeah.
And while doing so, Toyota Motor Company top executive warned the company could see profits drop as much as 80%. For the year.
Because nobody's out there buying cars. They won't let them get into the dealerships.
That's exactly right. It's now, stupid. I have seen a few of them around here because we have a kind of a looser restraint on some of these dealerships that can do a over-the-line buy, and then you come and you pick it up, and seen that.
They'll deliver the car to you.
They'll deliver it right to you.
Oh, yeah. If you know what you want and you don't
exactly.
have to test drive, it's pretty easy.
It is.
Actually.
Toyota is marking its 20 years. Now, get this. I didn't realize it had been this long. The 20 years of their Prius.
Yeah, Prius has been around for a long. Well, it was the first one, really.
It was.
Yeah.
I know a couple people that have got these things. But they are marking it with a special anniversary edition. But the breakthrough hybrid is rapidly losing sales momentum as Toyota looks for ways to kickstart demand.
Well, everything else is.
Everything else is.
Eclipsed them.
Eclipsed them, as in nobody's buying anything.
Yeah.
Congrats to...
You know what's really frightening about that story, though?
What?
In 10 more years, the Prius will be a classic.
Oh, my God. Do you think there's going to be an original Prius, though, that's 30 years old?
There's some out there. Of course there are. I just can't imagine seeing
one. I can't imagine them even lasting that long, but maybe so. Got a retro battery in there.
1990 is 30 years ago.
Can you imagine? Maybe the battery is, like, totally run down. You'd have to... Oh, I don't even want to think about it. Yeah, 30 years, 10 more years, it'll be classic. Yes. Jeez. Biff, get away from me.
Give me the hoverboard.
Jeez. I was just thinking about that movie. What was it that, whereabouts was it that, okay, the original.
It was Back to the Future 2. Oh,
yes, so the main character, come on.
Marty McFly.
Marty McFly gets this sports book.
Yes.
But how did he get it back? Because Biff found it and took it with him. And how did he...
I don't remember. I'd have to go back
and
watch
I was like, okay,
again.
Because of that, Biff World became the way things...
Well, yeah,
because
he made all money on the bets.
That's right.
Yeah, that's right.
So anyways, I thought, I'll have to watch that again. congratulations to Morgan Lucas, Senior Vice President of Lucas Products, son of Forrest and Charlotte, the founders of the company.
Right.
He is now taken over as the newly appointed president of Lucas Oil.
Ah.
And they've got all sorts of stuff going on, and they're really, really big into racing. I noticed that Lucas Oil is like, they've got their own media outfit, so they have their own channel and everything. So good for them. And then I was doing a little surfing, kind of looking at some things, and Hemmings Car of the Day or a Week, I came across a 1958 Nomad four-door, six-passenger, 283-inch original motor. Everything's original, three-speed, in really good condition, in New Jersey for $14,000. Now, I thought that the Nomad only came in two doors. Am I mistaken? I thought
the Nomad is a two-door.
Well, this one says a four-door Nomad.
Well, it must be a custom piece then, because they were all two doors.
So why would they have called it a Nomad in the ad? Because it was only a two-door.
Yeah. The Nomad was a two-door. That was the definition. It was the body style, that big swoop of metal behind the front window.
Right.
That was the trim piece. It was a two-door.
So Hemmings needs to clean up their act because
or
there was
the guy who has the car
there
could
we,
have customized it and, you know,
it was still
door.
Four doors. It was all a four-door.
The picture was a four-door.
Yes.
Well, it's not a Nomad. But,
no.
You know, they print what you send them. So it could be the guy just decided to say it was a Nomad.
Oh, to get a little more bites on there.
Well, it could be.
Because my neighbor had a Nomad, and it was two-door. It was beautiful.
No, everybody will know. Beautiful body style, though.
Oh, they are.
Hey, thanks for tuning in. Coming up on The Windshield View, we are going to talk to Adam Rowe from Zero Labs. And I guarantee you, this is going to be something you have never heard before. Don't go away. If you're an electronic vehicle fan, this is your segment. Cartoons Magazine is back. You know those crazy car comics from the past. They've returned in the all-new Cartoons Magazine, featuring some of your favorite artists along with a whole slew of brand new ones, all working together to bring you an entire magazine full of one laugh-out-loud auto-related story after another. Bi-monthly issues are available at your local comic book store, newsstand, and directly through Cartoons Magazine website at cartoonsmag.com. That's cartoonsmag.com, where you can subscribe to a whole year's worth of fun. Cartoons Magazine, there's nothing else like it.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Building a hot rod, rat rod, project vehicle with or without wheels? Bumping up against your skill level? Witch Doctor Restoration can give you a hand or a head to bounce an idea off of. Shane Osborne is an expert at all kinds of fabrication and mechanical work. He can take your ideas and bring them to life, or just show up at your garage and weld up the frame for your rod so it stays together. Your project is his project. If you're anywhere in the greater Seattle area, call him. He'll come to you. 206-437-1765. Witch Doctor Restoration is the place for quality work at your garage. Witch Doctor Restoration, 206-437-1765, 206-437-1765.
Listen and imagine. It takes 5 seconds to send a text, and for those 5 seconds, you're driving blind.
Life is worth more than a text.
Stay alive. Don't text and drive.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org, a message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. Project Yellow Light.
This is Donnie Smith. You've been listening to Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust. Enjoy yourself.
In 95, I helped tow your trailer. And in 09, it was sparks from me, your chains, dragging behind your truck that accidentally started a wildfire.
Spark a change, not a wildfire. Visit SmokeyBear.com, brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service.
Hi, it's Jeff Conwell with the Monsters and Manson, giving a big shout-out to everyone at Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust.
My mind's out of gear, and my heart's in overdrive. I've everything to fear. I ain't never been more alive.
Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust is back with the first half of the Windshield View, and this week we are chatting with Adam Rowe from Zero Labs. Welcome, Adam.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, we're glad to have you.
You bet.
Now, I have to tell you, I am really looking forward to this conversation for reasons I'm sure you've had, you know, opportunity to explain to other folks. But for those who are listening, Adam is the director and founder, or CEO and director, excuse me, CEO and founder of Zero Labs. And Zero Labs is a, I'm gonna sort of say it's a tech company that's responsible for the development of one of the coolest electric vehicles I think I've ever seen, but I don't want to go in and try to explain it. Adam, I would love for you to explain. Give me some background on Zero Labs and how you got where you are.
Sure. I mean, it really came from a place I guess a lot of companies do. I owned an advertising and technology agency. I was a car collector. I had a lot of SUVs and like a lot of stories with classic SUVs. There's a love-hate relationship. You love them when they work, and when they don't, you're frustrated, but you sort of live for those moments where everything's great. I think I kind of had enough and wanted to find a better way to make these things last, and we looked at kind of every option, and then one day I rode one of my Broncos up to Mammoth Mountain after a backcountry snowboard trip.
Oh, right.
And the car cut out, which it love to do.
Yes.
At altitude, and then we drifted down this hill for about what seemed like 50 minutes. It was probably more like 40 seconds, but the power was out, and we were just rolling. Mm-hmm. But I could hear everything. The windows were open, and it was just this beautiful little moment where I was like, "This is what it should be like." Not competing with the motor, or wondering if this thing's going to cut out or how long you can go, but actually experiencing what's outside the car. And you had a whole new appreciation for that. And I think that became very a defining moment. And then we studied electrical car engineering and the history of it, which is hilarious. And then also kind of what we can do about it. And then at that point when my agency was completed, I sold it in 2015. Then I began full-time work on this like that month. And it took us about probably 3.5 years to be able to show anything to anybody. Not because we didn't have a lot of ideas, but we every time we got into it, we kept finding a better way. We wanted to go further than we had before. I think before it was just a conversion project. And then it became this whole other thing where we actually had an opportunity to correct, just reimagine the vehicle itself. Like, what if the designers, if Fagan had had composites and he had had the ability to do these, a lot of these materials, what would he do now? How would you treat this now?
Right.
What if it wasn't supposed to be just sort of a utility farm truck that actually had what could have been more of a luxury car or more of an art object? And I think there's such reverence for these classic vehicles to just do what they did back then would be, in modern terms, would be like your romance of like an Atari 2600.
There you
is
go.
It's better in your memory than it is in person. If you would actually play that now, you're like, what is this?
Yeah, exactly right.
And that's how nostalgia works. You tend to favor it. You create these favorable memories of the way things, the idealized version of the past.
Mm-hmm.
But you overlook all the things like smelling like gas or the fact that it stalled and those things. And I think that's what led to this, is we wanted to make a much better version of the past, but overcoming all the things that you hate and just give you the things that you love.
And
that led to a series of Broncos.
Yeah, it's a very cool kind of way to take a new, you know, a new look at obviously a classic. And just so that everybody's clear, your mission statement, your product line basically, is essentially one version of a car. It's the classic original sort of Ford Broncos, reimagined, re-engineered as an electric vehicle. Is that, I mean, that's oversimplifying, but that's basically it, right?
Yeah, that is it. And I think that, you know, when you're making a car electric, it's a completely different set of engineering.
Sure.
And so it's not going to be as simple as just swapping out a motor with a different motor. You know, the old version of the car wasn't designed to hold and carry itself the way that an electric car would.
Of course. Now, if you don't mind, I'm going to read something that I pirated from your website, but it struck me as being, you know, a remarkable kind of piece of documentation, sort of. It's almost a dream sequence, if you don't mind me saying so. For those new to the EV space or who are considering an EV purchase, it's important to remember that a 50-year-old rebuilt classic vehicle, especially an electric one, will never be in line with the costs of mass manufacture, for the same reason a gallon of paint is always going to be cheaper than painting in a gallery. The 66 through 77 first generation Ford Bronco only sold 225,000 total units over a 12-year period, and that's the car we're talking about. And that was more than 50 years ago. By contrast, Tesla, and we are going to talk about Tesla, with nearly $20 billion in funding and $113 billion in debt, mass-produced nearly twice that many in 2019 alone. There's a couple of other companies, of course, who are, you know, producing or hoping to produce electronic vehicles. Rivian is one of them, and they've, you know, the startup, they have not actually produced a car, and there's some others that you mentioned on your website. But you're actually in a place where you can do this with a vehicle that a lot of people would say, this thing is like ancient, but cool, you know, very cool, but it's kind of an old car. You completely re-engineer these things, is that correct?
Yeah, we re-engineered it, and then we had two development models which were near perfect. They're gorgeous. But after we drove them around, we kind of looked at each other and like, we could do better. And so we went into a whole new generation of architecture. Right after we launched, we began Gen 2 right away. I actually had a lot of the ideas for Gen 2 while I was at my agency. So everything we're delivering for a customer beginning this year is all the Gen 2 stuff, which is actually better than what's on the website.
No, we would hope so.
Well, and because of that, when I look at it, you have everything handcrafted. You talk to us a little bit about the process of where do these vehicles come from, what do you do with them, what kind of drivetrain you're using, power plant, et cetera. Kind of walk us through that
Sure.
for us.
Sourcing is kind of a black art.
That's a great term.
The Broncos itself is, as you know, it's like Hagerty's top-selling collectible SUV for like
right.
60 year in a row.
Yep.
So when people are trying to understand why a Bronco is so expensive, it's half the price of a Tesla, even if you pull it out of a swamp.
Right.
So that's a starting point. And then we have to go through it and see how much of the car really is worth saving. We always look for the stuff that the much of the soul of the car is we can save. A lot of times it's just a tub, some of the fenders, the panels, but most of the time there's always something weirdly perfect about every car. like there's one panel that just somehow didn't get messed with.
Right.
The other one's got like trees growing out of it or something.
Yeah, yeah.
But,
oh yeah.
So
you've seen my backyard apparently.
Metal. Yeah. and then it, just to begin, it's more of an autopsy, and then it's a rebuilding process, and we kind of know how we want it to end. And so we have jigs in place to make sure everything lines up. And if this part just won't do it, we'll find an aftermarket part, or if it's carbon fiber, we'll use our own, which is designed to be perfect, and build up from there until we get to a final part. And, you know, every client's goals are different. I mean, they're not that different, but they're pretty similar. But how they want the configuration is going to be different. Our chassis is 100% in-house built. And the production versions of the vehicle, which we haven't really talked too much about, have both independent front and rear suspension. And
well, let's actually, that's very cool. Let's hold on that one for a second, because I want to talk about the chassis and also, you know, the kind of individual construction of each one. Because really, I think it's fair to say that each one of these things is really kind of a one-off. Because of the way the cars come, it's not, you know, it's not consistent. You're not buying parts. You're buying a vehicle and sort of reimagining it. Let's think about that as we get ready for the second segment. We're talking to Adam Rowe. His company is Zero Labs, and I encourage you to go to his website. It's zerolabs.com, and you will see an amazing rundown of how this entire idea came about. And as we head for quarter three of 2020, this could be pretty exciting when you get right down to it. Adam, stay with us. We're going to be back. The Windshield View will return. We've got more from Adam Rowe on Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust. You're into cars, you love a good time, and you'd rather build it than buy it. You might just love the Rat Bastards. The Rat Bastards Car Club is a family-oriented, non-profit organization. We believe in 1969 and older, in the rough is enough, real steel and iron, old-school, traditional hot rods and rat rods. We get together, have fun, help each other, and love to drive them. Your build is our build, because that's the way car clubs are supposed to be. The Rat Bastards are a new class of old school, and our signature event is the Infestation every July. Find us at a cruise in all over the Puget Sound and on the Rat Bastards Car Club page on Facebook.
More Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust after these messages.
Hi, I'm Danica Patrick. Watching my nieces grow, play, and learn is amazing, but not every child gets to be carefree. 1 in 6 kids in the U.S. are hungry. This breaks my heart, and it's something that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and gives it to families in need. To help, visit feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
I adopted Bento in 2010 from a shelter. A lot of people know him as Keyboard Cat.
That's just one adoption story that started at a shelter. Visit theshelterpetproject.org to find a pet near you. Brought to you by Maddie's Fund, the Humane Society of the United States.
This is Jerry Heasley, and you're listening to Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust, the greatest show I've been on in at least the last year.
Nurse, set up an IV. And you, her boyfriend, you were the driver?
Yes, doctor, but I didn't mean to hurt her. I only had a few drinks. I was just buzzed.
Just buzzed? Oh, then your girlfriend is fine.
Hey, sweetie, I feel great.
She's really okay?
What, are you kidding? No, not really. Nurse, get me a suture kit. Stat.
Buzzed driving. Maybe we should stop acting like it's no big deal. Buzzed driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation and the app.
Back in Vehicle City. And we're back with the second half of the Windshield View. Before the break, we were talking with Adam Rowe, the founder and CEO of Zero Labs at www.zerolabs.com, about his absolutely amazing, almost one of a kind, each one certainly is an individual, electric vehicle based on the 66 through 77 Ford Bronco, the first generation Ford Bronco. And we were getting into talking about the chassis and basically the running gear part of this thing. Adam, I don't want to take you away from that. Let's go on with where you were. You're essentially taking a car and kind of reimagining it literally from the ground up, except for mostly the body panels. We're so far so good?
Yeah, I mean, I think everything is an opportunity to appreciate what the original designers did and find the spirit of it, while at the same time find a place for improvement. You know, and I think we're inspired by people like Sid Mead and Dennis Villeneuve, who've
sure.
kind of taken old movies and how they ask the question of, like, how can I pick up where this left off and not kind of ruin it? And I think, like, that's what the new Blade Runner did. That's what the new Tron did.
There you go.
You know, that's what probably the new Dune movie would do.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is to pay it a compliment without really underwriting the integrity of it. And the Bronco was never really designed to be that much of a luxury car or even particularly well-engineered. It was a utility vehicle.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think fair to say bare bones.
Several other vehicles.
Yeah. Yeah, they were, and
but
that first generation, I mean, nobody knew what an SUV was at that point. They were literally Ford's sort of updated Jeep. I mean, I think that's fair to say. And I've ridden in them, some of the older ones, and they're kind of trucky. I mean, the original suspension was not friendly to you, especially if you had any kind of back issues. I'm assuming that you are completely reimagining that piece.
Yeah, like, yeah, exactly. There are some people that are still making them, you know, with leaf spring suspension and
sure.
all the original components. I think there's integrity in that, but I think the opportunity in modern standards is what, how do we take it further? And I think for our vehicles, we can make each one a special snowflake, or we can solve the problem once and for all. So our chassis is really the foundation of all the vehicles, and the chassis are very similar to each other, even though the models might be different. And we're putting independent front and rear suspension on everything. Because it's just how modern cars are.
Sure, of course.
But the trick is, how do you hide all that and make it not look like it's that different from the original, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, maintaining the sort of soul of the vehicle.
The aesthetics of it.
Yeah,
yeah.
I think that would be a challenge, a design challenge, certainly. And I have to ask at this point, since your chassis is essentially the thing that holds up all the power and everything else, at what point does the romance end? I mean, you prop the hood and there's nothing remotely 40 in there. So where does all that stuff get hidden?
I mean, the new version of the motors, it's a single or dual transaxle.
Got it.
So there's no, we did have a transmission and a transfer case in the originals. I think there's great, romance in those. But on a mechanical level, they add a complexity, and they add a weight, and they add a load to the batteries and the power plant that just isn't necessary. Or put it another way, the tactile gain from having it present doesn't really override the desire for more power and more range.
Got it.
And so the new versions don't have that.
Interesting. Well, and you know, I'm sure it's always a work in progress.
Yeah.
So
we still have shifters, but they're just not actually connected to a transmission, but it still feels like the other one. And none of our clients are like, do I have to really drive a manual trans? I'm like,
right.
No, you don't have to.
So what would you, say there is a, cause I've seen that at least in your pictures, the shifters there. So does it do anything? Can you use it for something?
Yeah. So the ones in the pictures are connected to a real transfer case.
Okay.
The ones that we're making for production, there's two shifters, and that gives you full motor control. So you can either go dual motor, full power, rear motor, full power, front motor, full power, or both motors, half power, if you're doing like rock crawling or something.
Ah, nice.
It's designed to perfectly model the ratios of a transfer case by just giving you motor control.
So that actually
tactile, it still has haptic feedback and everything, but it just doesn't have all the weight, unnecessary weight that you would get on an electric motor.
Got it. That actually brought up a question, because you said if you're doing rock crawling, and I was going to ask you, clearly, I mean, the Bronco was, you know, meant to be an off-road vehicle at some level, and whether they were successful or not, if you're going to stay with that aesthetic. So you can actually take these things off-road if you want to. You're building them for that sort of dual purpose, yes?
I think like everything, you can. But it was never intended to be full time. You know,
right.
we get yelled at sometimes because there's things like, how can you drive this thing around unless it has, you know, gigantic off road knob tires? I'm like, you know, the original Bronco had Mustang tires.
Right, exactly.
It was never meant to be a full time off road vehicle.
Yeah.
But there is that romance, and we don't want to ruin that romance. So it's really up to the customer. If they want to use it to cruise down to the beach and throw their surfboards and back,
there
you don't
you
need
go.
Monster off-road tires.
Yeah,
that.
There you go. Yeah.
So you say dual motor. So talk to us about the motors themselves.
Okay. Each motor is 300 horsepower. It has a direct connection to the wheel. It's not an in-wheel. I don't think you're going to ever see in-wheel motors on an off-road because of the unsprung weight would just be too...
Yeah.
It would be a mess. So ours is a transaxle that's cradled inside the frame, but it provides direct power to the wheel in a way that it sort of acts as a... it does a lot of the same things that you would do with a differential, but you just don't have the weight and the drag of a differential, so now it's directly powering the wheel. And the front and rear motors are identical.
So you actually have, a combined horsepower of, 600 then?
If you choose to go with two motors, you'll have 600 horsepower.
So do these things actually go pretty fast down the road?
We haven't driven the new chassis yet. The first one is coming off the line. The first production chassis is coming off the line now.
Mm-hmm.
It's being mated to the motors this week, and we're going to do some table tests. But it'll. This is why you have to reinforce everything, because if you put 600 horsepower in a original vehicle, you'll break stuff.
Yeah.
You know.
What's your
easy conversions? Would you see that all the time?
Yeah. What's your dream goal? I mean, where do you see the projection for the thing in terms of top end performance and that kind of thing?
I think 300 horsepower is plenty, honestly.
Yeah.
I mean, where are you going to go? Where are you going to take an SUV that's shaped like a collection bin?
Yeah.
Or like a utility dumpster and go 90 miles an hour? It's just not
sure.
The wind drag coefficient and yeah. terminal velocity would get you before anything else.
Yeah.
But I think it's the romance knowing you have something that's not going to choke because it comes on an on ramp. I think there's going to be a lot of fun to be had by having a Bronco next to a modern car and killing it. Like I've raced
yeah.
Mustangs in these things before, and it's pretty hilarious.
Oh well, sure. It's all torque. I mean,
yeah. I mean,
and at 3,000 pounds, you're not
loud.
There's not much to push, so that's actually pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Well,
but I think in general the goal is the chassis should be able to do this for other vehicles, and then bring other vehicles into the mix too, and bring our costs down or increase our volume.
Yeah, and you were talking to me when we were setting up the interview that right now you're coming off with a Gen 2 and you're staying with the Bronco now, and that you have plans to maybe put a little bit larger frame and body so that you can store more batteries and that kind of thing. So talk to us about where your client base is coming from at this point, since you are still in that. I mean, you've been, 3 years, you said? And you've been perfecting this, and so is this all coming pretty much out of your pocket? Do you have a handful of people that have invested in? Are they part of the actual company itself?
So today it's been myself. We are speaking to investors now about scale. A lot of it really comes down to a lot of our clients. Really, everybody wants it now.
Of course,
nobody wants to wait.
New toys.
And so I think that. Although we're going to continue to do a large number of custom vehicles, the reality is we have people show up and go, I want to come get this car right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't care what it costs. I'm like, we don't have one right now. And I think that you hear that too many times and you're like, all right, we got to do something about this. And I think so we're going to be looking for working with investors to really just help us kind of build out that inventory so we can satisfy the desire that people want these things now and not 3 years from now. I mean, you look at companies who do amazing work, but the wait list is 3 years. And
yes.
when they finally get the vehicle, they're kind
yes.
of over it.
Yeah.
You know, like that was 3 years ago. I'm a different person now.
Yeah,
you know?
That's true. That's true.
Well, the
classic example is the Veyron. You know, they pimped that thing for a
yeah.
long time before it actually came out. And, you know, I'm sure it's worth it, whatever $3.2 million you want for the thing. But for heaven's sake, if you got to wait that long, you know, that the bloom is kind of off the rose at that point. And by the way, that makes me want to ask you, I think I know this, but you're going to tell me anyway. What's the projected MSRP for this thing? Where are you looking at as a price point?
So we have two for the Broncos. We have a base of 185, which is essentially a fully complete rebuild, you know, everything. single motor with a more of a traditional steel body
right.
is around 185. And then the carbon fiber is like 50 grand more just because it's carbon fiber.
Because carbon fiber, yeah.
We could definitely charge more. There's guys out there charging $350,000 for, you know, everything's made of complete off-the-shelf parts. And it's all like third-party stuff and, you know, leaf spring suspension even, you know. But I think we have to pay homage to the market. We have to earn that. I think we just can't run out there and just declare ourselves awesome. We need the world to think that. And so we're coming in at a price, I think, where that isn't great for us the first year, but I think it proves that we're willing to do our time. I think Singer followed that, you know, similar model when Singer first started.
Right.
They're
right.
175,000. Now they're 1.3 million, but they earned that.
Yeah.
And I think we have to get there. We can't just declare ourselves, no matter how many good reviews we get, and we have a lot of them, that doesn't entitle you to charge for an unknown quantity.
Exactly right. I hear your background in marketing talking there because, you know, you want to underpromise and overdeliver wherever you possibly can. So, you know, being able to do something that you say you're going to do is the key to, you know, any sort of, you know, automotive success for sure.
Well, and
it's how premium brands are born.
Yeah, exactly right.
It is. And we had Lance Stander on from Hillbank and Superformance. And, you know, he's a small manufacturer. He's got his plant down in South America or South Africa, and then he ships them in here. And they're Cobra replicas, and you know, you don't, and they're not even with any power plant. And although they're working to change that, but people want something. They want to be able to come in your showroom, see something, and go, "I want that now." And
yeah.
And you are exactly right because we have so many people that come on our show, and we know personally that do custom builds for people. And some of these, you're right. Some of these things can take 1, 2, 3 years. Unless the person's patient, most people are going to be like, "I don't want to wait 2 or 3 years." They want it now, and you know,
show me one and give me the keys.
That's right. And yet, what you were saying is, well, geez, then that means we have to have 20 or 30 of these puppies sitting in the back lot that haven't even been touched yet, and we have to have an assembly line style of thing, and we have to have more people. And now you're talking a lot more production costs. And so you are, as a small operator, stuck in that rock and a hard spot, aren't you?
Well, I think that the demand we have relative to our ability to deliver them is way out of proportion. You know, we get hundreds of calls a week, and a lot of them are very, very serious. You know, billionaires and celebrities and CEOs of well-known companies. But it's always the same. Like, "I want this right now."
Yeah.
And I'm like, "I know you do. You know, I know you do that. I know you want it right now."
We do too. But
and I want to give it to you right now. But this has, I think we've honored maybe too closely this notion of custom vehicles just take a long time. And I think that what I would say is that, at least from our perspective, I think your special, you know, special embossed logo with ostrich leather and, you know, Queen Victoria handle, you know, embossed, whatever, that none of that is important as you getting this thing when you want it.
Yeah.
And these are guys who fly their own jets, and they don't wait in lines, and they want this now. And I feel like it's kind of a disservice to not be able to honor that, but it does take a bit of an upfront capital. The good news with that, though, is that economy of scale does translate to lower prices or increased margins or better build quality. Because you're doing enough of them, now you really got it down.
Yep. You know, the guy who...
not every car is a special snowflake.
You probably know Jim Lavalle, Mike Lavalle, the guy from Killer Paint, or at least you know of him. He passed here recently, but he said one thing a while back that made me kind of smile. He says, "You want it right, or you want it now?" And,
right.
You know, I'm willing to wait if it's going to be right. Hey, Adam, we really appreciate you coming and talking with us. We could certainly go longer. We'd love to have you back at some point down the line. But before we get out of here, let's make sure that people know where to find you. It is zerolabs.com, www.zerolabs.com. Please go and check out this website. This is a revolutionary idea that really deserves your attention. Plus, you've got just a great set of videos on there. They're marvelous.
Thank you.
Adam Rowe from Zero Labs. Yeah, thanks
you
a
bet.
Lot. We
Thank
really
you.
Appreciate it. Come back and visit us again.
Look forward to it.
All right. Hey, you're listening to the greatest automotive info show in the known world. A cool hot rod story you can share with your friends is up next. It's Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust.
Today we decided to walk to school. The light counted. 15, 14,
31? I mean, 13?
We took a left on Carroll Street. Danny's smart, but he gets distracted.
I
realized he forgot his homework.
I hope he doesn't have another bad day at school.
When you can see learning and attention issues from their side, you can be on their side. That's why there's Understood.org, a free resource for the parents of the 1 in 5 kids with learning and attention issues. Go from misunderstanding to Understood.org.
Stick around. We'll be back after these words.
Building a hot rod, rat rod, project vehicle with or without wheels? Bumping up against your skill level? Witch Doctor Restoration can give you a hand or a head to bounce an idea off of. Shane Osborne is an expert at all kinds of fabrication and mechanical work. He can take your ideas and bring them to life, or just show up at your garage and weld up the frame for your rod so it stays together. Your project is his project. If you're anywhere in the greater Seattle area, call him. He'll come to you. 206-437-1765. Witch Doctor Restoration is the place for quality work at your garage. Witch Doctor Restoration, 206- 206-437-1765, 206-437-1765.
I adopted Bento in 2010 from a shelter.
A lot of people know him as Keyboard Cat.
That's just one adoption story that started at a shelter. Visit theshelterpetproject.org to find a pet near you. Brought to you by Maddie's Fund, the Humane Society of the United States.
This is Quentin Folk. I dig up old hot rods, and I also dig this podcast.
I want to thank my mommy for loving me so much.
For taking me to the doctor when I broke my foot.
For leaving me alone when I wanted to be alone.
And now, as a grown-up, I'm thankful for being able to take care of you, my dear mom. For taking you to your therapies. For understanding that sometimes you simply want to be alone.
Roles change without us noticing. That's why AARP gives you the information to provide even better care for your loved one. Visit aarp.org/caregiving.
Hi, this is Adam Kramer from Avance.com. You're listening to Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust.
It's time for Cars Confidential, and we're back with another story from, what, Lance Lambert again? Oh, great. I love his stuff. And what do we got for this week, Brady?
Well, this week, the story, I picked this story because I just like the name. It's not what you think, but it's fun to listen. It's fun to say. The name of this story is Father Dusters.
He has a lot of fun.
It could be. Hello, I'm Father Dusters.
Yes.
I don't know. I have no idea, but we're going to find out.
I can hear that Higgins right there.
Yes, yes. Keeping your car... Well, I was actually, before I came down here tonight, we were watching Robin Hood, the Russell Crowe version, and Friar Tuck had that same accent, so I stole it. Keeping your car clean is a good thing. Keeping it too clean is, to some people, not a good thing. My daughter and I decided to spend an evening together doing something different. Our choice was to attend an improvisational comedy group's performance at a local theater. Improv groups, better known as improv groups, perform skits based on suggestions from the audience. A good improv group can provide the audience with a show that will amuse and amaze and confuse in some cases. A bad improv group steals an hour or two from your life that you can never get back. Fortunately, this evening's performance, Jet City Improv in Seattle, were excellent. By the way, I'm going to say nice things about Jet City Improv. Back in the day, I used to go to their shows fairly regularly. My sister, at one point, decided that she wanted to learn how to do improv comedy, and she worked with a couple of people who were from Jet City. She was never part of that troupe. But
interesting
she did it for
side
one.
Note.
Yeah,
Are they the guys that are up there in the U District?
They were at the time.
Okay, well,
not sure whether.
I happen to have gone in there, and back in 2012, I had a video project. Then I was learning to be an actor, and I had co-written, and I took some improv lessons, and it was a lot of fun.
Some of those people used to teach that. As a side. And back in the day, there was Discover You and the Learning Annex, both of whom offered classes and that kind of thing. I taught for them for a long time. Anyway, back to the story. Just before the intermission, the group's spokesperson asked the members of the audience to go into their cars and get anything that might be a good prop for an improv scene. They would choose the best item to open the second portion of the evening's performance. Well, my daughter and I went back to my 1960 Thunderbird and retrieved a car duster from the trunk. Now, a car duster, you might know, it's a very large, shaggy brush. It's got long cotton tentacles slightly coated with beeswax. It looks a lot like a cherry-flavored sheepdog on a stick rather than a brush.
Great description.
Yeah. The brush is dragged across the surface of the car, and the long, waxy tentacles pick up the car's dust and leave a shining surface. It's simple, and it works pretty well. So, back into the theater lobby, we went with the large, strange-looking, bright red brush. We were standing in the lobby holding, or waiting to be let back into the theater, when a woman noticed the brush and asked, "What is that?" I told her what it was and how it worked. She and her companions looked at me like I had completely lost my mind. Lance gets that look a lot, actually. You dust your car. She paused for a moment and then asked again, "You actually dust your car?"
Never been to a car show, I could tell.
Yeah, it was at this very moment that I realized I'd tripped over into the obsessive-compulsive world populated by people who count the number of steps they take and get up seven times a night to make sure the front door is locked. My daughter, a lovely young woman, but also a supporter of her mother's opinion that I'm a bit compulsive when it comes to anything with four wheels, waited for my reply. Yes, I do dust my car. I have one in each of my cars and an extra one in the garage. The woman and her companions stared at me in the same way they would have if a penguin had walked into the lobby and asked to borrow $20. They just could not believe what they were seeing and hearing. You see, I'm a car guy, and the condition of my car is very important to me. Dusting it keeps it in better condition. She, no doubt, wondered how a few billion nearly microscopic dust particles could harm a car. She mumbled a reply and then departed to the far side of the lobby to giggle with her friends about the nutcase they had just met. No doubt, they looked upon my daughter with sympathy and wondered if she was beyond the age that would make calling the Child Protective Services a wise decision. The lobby lights dimmed, we returned to our seats, and yes, you guessed it, the improv group used the car duster to open the second set of the evening. In the scene, the duster became an alien trying to take over the world.
Yes.
Or a cherry-flavored sheepdog. I don't know. My daughter's smile was as bright as the dust-free surface of my 1960 T-Bird. You know, we go to car shows, like, way too much.
Oh,
but,
yes.
I don't think I've ever been to it. Well, with the possible exception of the Rat Rod shows, because nobody dusts their car at the Rat Rod shows. But almost all of them, somebody has got more than somebody. Many people have those things. And it's funny because it makes perfect sense in context. It's a car duster. Of course it is. And I understand why they're doing it. You know, you spend $15,000 on a paint job or more. You want it to look nice.
Yep.
And that's, you know, especially the guys in the concourse shows, they spend big dollars. And so there you are. But I have seen that look on spectators at the show going, "What are you doing?" And I get what that woman was thinking.
Well, I did the first, I gave my van a bath this last Saturday morning.
Yes, I noticed. I can tell what color it is.
It had been about 6 months. And so...
I had no idea it was red. I mean,
well, when I start getting green growing things, it's time to scrub it. So anyway, I did that, and as soon as I was done, I had gotten in the garage and came back out, and it was already dusty, and I went... There was like little print that from my hand just barely touching.
Yeah. It's pollen.
It's the pollen.
Yeah, pollen. It's around here... In the Northwest, we are pollen central.
Oh, my gosh. It was yellow.
Yeah,
And I'm like, I thought about the duster. What if I had a duster? Well, every 5 minutes, you'd be dusting that car.
Constantly dusting. I got a black car. And come on. You know, it's all over there. It's sad. But, you know, under these trees, we have so many evergreens around here, and they're gorgeous trees. But they leak pollen forever at certain times.
It is the evergreen. It comes. Yeah. It literally comes off. Yeah. It's not the little plants or anything like that.
No, it's the pines and the firs.
The other thing that I notice is when it's not like, what is it, sagebrush or the stuff that they put in the middle of, that's yellow in the middle of the highways.
Scotch broom.
Oh, that stuff will just get everywhere.
That's the worst. Scotch broom should be
yes.
removed from the planet. It's a lovely ground cover, but it's horrible.
It
stuff.
Is.
Plus, about half the people I know are allergic to it. It's full of pollen.
It is. And I know we've got our other section coming up, but There's more closures. Have we heard? Did they actually close down the Cruisin' Colby? It's still
Cruisin' to Colby is closed. The Oyster Run in Anacortes, which is a huge motorcycle event,
in
the Pacific Northwest.
Fall.
Yeah, it's closed. They canceled that. They have canceled the Greenwood Car Show. We already know that one.
Yep.
They are canceling. Let's see. Oh, they canceled the Family 4th celebration in Mount Lake Terrace, which is one of the suburbs of Seattle.
Yeah.
We haven't heard about the Seafair situation yet. We're still hoping that that will go on. And the Edmonds Car Show, which is one of the summer closers and a beautiful show, that one depends totally for its support money on the food fair in Edmonds, which is called the Taste of Edmonds, and it's a wonderful
event. Awesome, big name acts.
Right now, they don't know if they can do that, and if they can't do that, then the Edmonds Car Show is going to be canceled.
You know, and I think everybody that's listening to this, because we got people all over the United States and world, for that matter, I suspect, they're all itching and jonesing for the shows and are all just going, enough is enough.
I will tell you what's happening this coming weekend.
I know. You're hanging out with a...
Well, so here's what we did.
Yeah.
It's people are doing cruises. They're doing cruises there because you're in your car and you're safe distancing and all that kind of stuff. So there was a huge show in Manson, in Chelan, in the central part of Washington, called The Monsters in Manson. Our good friend Jeff Conwell came up with that show 5 years ago, and this year was going to be a huge one. Well, the committee has canceled that show. However, the Rat Bastards Car Club and the RSC group out of Spokane and Tri-Cities and some of the guys from the Olympic Peninsula Rat Racers, those guys, there's going to be about 30 cars.
Oh, that's awesome.
Going over for a cruise where there's no show,
that's
there's
right.
no trophies.
No,
there's
no,
we're just all kind of getting
just
together. So we're taking a two-day loop. We're going to go over on, I'm going over on Friday, but they're going on Saturday to Chelan, and then on Sunday, they're getting up and coming back over the North Cascades Highway, which opened yesterday.
Oh, wow.
And so it's going to be a really nice cruise.
Now, which way do you go?
Well, I'll go over Highway 2, and then we'll come back over Highway 20.
Yeah, that'll be good.
Fun. Hey, the Nathan Lipinski Weekly Trivia Question is next, as well as a peek at next week's show, so put it in park. Stick around. Building a hot rod, rat rod, project vehicle with or without wheels? Bumping up against your skill level? Witch Doctor Restoration can give you a hand or a head to bounce an idea off of. Shane Osborne is an expert at all kinds of fabrication and mechanical work. He can take your ideas and bring them to life or just show up at your garage and help. Your project is his project. If you're anywhere in the greater Seattle area, call him. He'll come to you. 425-626-4135. Witch Doctor Restoration is the place for quality work at your garage. Witch Doctor Restoration, 425-626-4135. 425-626-4135.
Hang on till right after these messages.
It only takes a minute to find out if you may have prediabetes. And you can do it at doihaveprediabetes.org. But you're probably not going to, are you? Kids, work, listening to the radio. You're busy, which is great because busy people can't get prediabetes. Oh my, I read that wrong. They can. Should have worn my glasses. So visit doihaveprediabetes.org and take a short test, because prediabetes can be reversed.
Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
Looking for a job worth talking about? Teaching is creative, collaborative, and intellectually challenging. See why teachers have better work stories at teachdfw.org and learn more about becoming a teacher. Brought to you by Teach and the Ad Council.
This is Vince LaViolette from Shelby American in Las Vegas. And you're listening to Horsepower Chrome and Rust.
Did you hear the news? Cartoons Magazine is back. Yep, those car-crazy comics from the past have returned in an all-new Cartoons Magazine, featuring some of your favorite artists along with a whole slew of new ones, all working together to bring you an entire magazine filled with one laugh-out-loud auto-related story after another. Bi-monthly issues are available directly through the Cartoons Magazine website at cartoonsmag.com.
Help us if you can. You're an El Camino. El Camino man. Only you can understand.
Hey, welcome back to Around the Wheel, where our El Camino man Steve, the producer, Johan, is ready to help with the Nathan Lipinski Weekly Automotive Trivia Question. But before we do that, I know that Steve is getting his garage cleared out. He is prepping to put the El Camino in there, and soon, yes, soon, ladies and gentlemen, perhaps in 2025, Steve will take the...
I told my apart,
and we will start rebuilding that.
Brady, I told my wife I may have to build another shed in the backyard to hold the car parts.
There are going to be parts and pieces,
and,
yes.
But what I end up doing is this last Saturday and Sunday, Saturday basically, I had a really busy day. My wife was out of town. I washed my car, and then I went to town on a couple other things, and then I got to going on my shed.
Nice.
The entrance of my shed, the floor had rotted. So what I did is I removed the entry plate, and I got down there, and I literally cut out the rotted spot, and I put new boards in there, reinforced the underneath, and it's like good as new.
Oh, nice.
And now what I'm going to do is go buy some probably half-inch plywood to lay over the old plywood, reinforce it, going to revamp the whole shed, get rid of a bunch of stuff, and I'm going to have a lot of room in there.
Well, there you
and
go. Well, that's what you need.
That's what you need, because you can't keep it in the garage when you're working on it.
That's true. Well, it'll be all right. You let me know.
I told you
I'm good for it. We're going to make this work. So last week, the Nathan Lipinski Weekly Automotive Trivia Question was, what year did more than a million cars end up being registered in the United States? That was kind of a landmark, you know. And a million registered cars, that seems like a lot. I mean, it isn't now, but at some point, that was a whole bunch. Steve was guessing somewhere in the 20s, I think.
Yes.
It turns out that year was 1913.
No way.
13.
There was that many people?
1898 was the first, 1887 the Benz became for sale. But, you know, 96 was the Duryea. That was the first production motor vehicle in the United States, okay? So 96, let's call it, you know, 1900 to 13 years later, there were more than a million cars registered in the country.
Still, to me, that is an amazing feat. When
it's
you really
huge.
Think about it, and there wasn't just one manufacturer. By that time, there were... What, several?
There was a dozen.
Dozen.
Maybe more. Plus, there was a bunch of small guys that just built, you know, four or five cars out of their shed.
And they're kind of like what our guest tonight, Adam, is doing.
Yeah.
They all started out with a shed and they built one-ups.
Yeah. It's
absolutely
That's
amazing.
True.
I didn't realize it was that early.
Yeah. So Don Corleone was not our winner. He's a very cool guy from a movie that I just really enjoyed.
I have yet to see that movie.
You haven't seen The Godfather?
No.
You're kidding me.
I have not. It is on my list because I need 3 hours to sit and just watch.
Well,
I've been told it's one of the top 10.
Oh, it's great. You have to see it. You got to see all three of them. But so I said Don Corleone because I was joshing.
I like the French connection.
I was joshing with him on the phone. The guy who did come up with the correct answer was Don Corley.
Oh, okay.
And I said, I'm going to say Corleone on the air. And he said, don't do that. But I did. Anyway, congratulations to Don. He came up with the correct answer. Several other people did. In fact, I think Nathan Lipinski even gave me the correct answer, but he wasn't as fast as Don was. So, Don Corley, nice job. Don Corley, by the way, lives in Des Moines, Iowa.
I know someone going there.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yep.
Maybe they can say hi to Don. Anyway, our question this week is a pretty good one. In 1954, there was a safety addition to American cars that had never been done before. Nobody had ever thought of this. Now, the first safety issue in cars wasn't this one, but it was done. It became a requirement in 1954, this particular thing. And I think it's amusing because I'm going to give you a hint. Seat belts, which is the kind of universal safety device in cars, seat belts weren't required or installed until 1963.
Isn't that amazing?
But 54 was the year for this one. If you know, you can get us at contactus@horsepowerchromeandrust.com. You can go to the Facebook page and send an answer in there. You can send me a messenger thing or however else you'd like to do it. We reach just about a million enthusiasts every week. You're one of them because you're listening, and we're glad you do. Thanks for checking out our webpage and our Facebook page and all that other kind of stuff, as well as the archives on horsepowerchromeandrust.podomatic.com. Thanks to Adam Rowe from Zero Labs for chatting this week. For Shane Osborne and Steve Johan, I'm Brady Wright. Keep your eyes on the road, your hands on the wheel, and your foot to the floor. Next week, we're going to do it again on Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust.